Hey everybody, it's Laura, and I am here with Debbie Spitalnik to disrupt materialism around speech. Oh my gosh, what does that even mean? Well, let me tell you, this episode is super fun. Debbie is extremely funny and lively and full of wisdom and explains to us what the art of speech is and how it helps to heal. She talks about her personal spiritual journey, her own work with dyslexia in herself, and the healing of the students and adults and parents around her through pedagogical speech, which is a creative and beautiful way of understanding and strengthening yourself. If you are a Waldorf teacher or anyone interested in Waldorf education or anthroposophy, this is absolutely a must listen, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast and following it and sharing it. This is one I hope lots of people will share with teachers and parents alike, because I do think there's so much in it that is therapeutic and can help others in the world. Please stay all the way to the end and hear one of my favorite Rudolf Steiner verses, which just happens to be a speech exercise. Welcome to That Good May Become with me, Laura Scappaticci, where we learn to illuminate the esoteric in our everyday lives. Hey, Debbie, here we are together. Can you believe this?
No, we've been talking about it for a while.
We sure have. And you're on the East Coast of the U.S. What state are you in again?
I'm in Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C.
Okay, lovely. I did see that on your website that you have a workshop coming up there in February.
Yes.
That sounds in Bethesda? Yes.
That's with where Christine... the school is. The Washington Waldorf School is here.
Mm-hmm. And Christine Burke is another speech artist, and she'll be doing a workshop with you too. So hopefully
exactly.
People check that out. Yeah, that's going to be great. Well, I'm so glad you said yes to being on the show. I've never had a speech artist that I know of on the show. And this is so exciting. I'm glad. I had a super profound experience in a speech class I took at Antioch University. And but first, maybe we could hear a spiritual experience you have, speech or not speech related. That would be super.
Well, yes, I have many spiritual experiences. But when I was thinking about this question, and most of that relates to either speech or children, but I realized that, and as my son Brian would say, you know, Steiner just knocked it out of the park, didn't he? So every 7 years, there was a profound spiritual experience. And when I was around seven, I have to start off by saying I'm Jewish. So here I was, a six, seven-year-old, walking around this huge neighborhood in Missouri where I lived. And my neighbor was a Catholic girls' school. And there were Stations of the Cross there somewhere, like across the street or... I mean, I know how to get there, but I don't need to explain it to you. Anyway, I would go to the Station of the Cross. I kind of happened on it the first time by accident. And I felt not alone, like someone was taking care of me and that I was safe. And it was as real, you know, kind of the world opened up in such a way that was so real. That there was, it was as real as the bench I was sitting on or the bricks that I was walking on. I had no idea it was the Stations of the Cross until I was much older and I went back and I went, oh, now I understand what this is, but I had no idea. I just saw pretty statues. So that's when I was seven. Then when I was 35, between 35 and 42 is when I met anthroposophy and I went to teacher training, and my speech teacher created a wolf on the stage, and I can still see that wolf. He created it out of forming of the sounds and the imagination. And I was sitting, we were in the auditorium at Pine Hill, it was at Antioch, and this this being of this huge wolf was on the stage. Now, I'm going to stop for 1 second and say that I have enough learning challenges that, you know, we could write a book just about that. But one, the most significant one is I'm severely dyslexic, which I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my 50s. But it was enough that the doctor said to me, "How are you reading?" And I think it's just my cleric nature, full, you know, the force of will. And so when he made this wolf, I could hear the sounds in a way that I had never been able to hear sounds before. It was truly a spiritual experience. It was like, poof, this world exploded and opened up for me in some ways, in the same way it did when I was seven. There was this world, I realized there was this world that I could be safe in. Here, there was a world that I could see that was as real as the chair I was sitting in. And it was through language, which I'd never experienced really before. I really didn't read till high school. So there was that one. And then as I was studying speech and and in my teacher training, one day I was, I learned the Nixie of the Mill Pond by heart for one of my master's projects. And I remember starting the fairy tale, you know, once upon a time. And as I did that, I took a step and I, for the first time, I kind of stepped into this world that I had created, that I had painted, that had been moving. And it was not, it was really like crossing a threshold. It was not the world that I had been in before, but the miller and the Nixie and the pond and the rocky edge and the old woman, everything was there and alive and awake. And so I felt like in these ages between 35 and 42, that I was like on a magic carpet ride, and I would just see this world, this language that it was opened up to me in a way that had never been before, never been before. And then in my sixth decade, the seventh, another 7 year nodal point, when I finally got my speech diploma, and I was doing, after my performance, I had this one woman performance for my Abschluss, for my exam. And the other part of the exam were the speech exercises, which, you know, I shouldn't tell anybody, but I'm saying it on this podcast. I've always had, you know, like, oh my God, I have to do speech exercises. It's like doing scales, you know. But I was doing these speech exercises for my exam. And these, I don't know, it's like sparkles of gold or something, just came alive around me. And I have loved speech exercises ever since, but it was just like I was just showered with this. So it was yet another experience that was as real as where I was standing, and yet was kind of otherworldly. I would say spiritual. I don't know what other people would call it. Those things have made a huge difference in my life. Mm-hmm. And all I've ever wanted to do since I met speech was to make it accessible for other people. So if they wanted to, because it was very hard, it took me 25 years to get my training. It was very hard to, and expensive.
Yeah.
And time consuming to get this diploma unless you went off for 4 years. Which I wasn't going to do. I have three children. I've had three classes. I've been a class teacher for, you know, 30 years. And a husband, I couldn't leave for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all I've ever wanted to do, is just make it accessible. And so that's been my life's work out of these experiences.
I mean, okay, those are incredible experiences to describe from the first with this, it was sculptures you were walking through. Is that, that's okay. So they all sort of have this art piece in there, you know, this creative, I don't know, energy to them. So you have these beautiful sculptures and you're walking through, and then, you know, the words are impacting you, and this storytelling picture too, the, you know, the, that is an art as well. And I love the gold sparkles that you were talking about at the, you know, I feel like I've had that, the gold sparkle spiritual feeling too. I think one of my friends, we talked about, you know, that actually that's how we described it, like sparkles, like gold sparkles, which is, so there must be something in that that's happening energetically for us to describe, you know, can't really describe these spiritual experiences with materialistic words or descriptions, but I think gold sparkles is pretty good.
So good, we'll keep that.
We'll keep that one. And I like the journey you took us on over those years. So if we go back, like your website, The Art of Speech, right? Mm-hmm. Can you explain what it is? I mean, I took a class at Antioch University for their Waldorf teacher training, and we did one of the speech exercises, which I think goes In the vast
unmeasured worldwide spaces
and the endless stream of time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I felt like I went up to the instructor afterwards and I was like, I sort of feel like Rudolf Steiner's talking to me right now. Like I'd had this really powerful experience of him somehow through doing this exercise. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand what, I thought, oh, speech will make you a better teacher because you'll sound better. You'll be able to give the children the feeling of the words and the images with them rather than just dead words and, you know, letters smushed together. But can you just talk more about what speech is? Because it's probably unfamiliar to many people, and accessibility is your game. So let's do that.
Yeah, well, this is what I try to do. So let's... So kind of the big picture is the goal is to free your voice. Okay, so we can start there. And speech empowers the voice and nourishes the soul. And so if we think about bringing to life these sounds and words and these spaces between those sounds and words, right? And they have life, just like, you know, the image of the Nixie. It has life. It's not just this dead being. And each sound is sculpted. They've done a study where you can see the visible forms in your larynx of how each sound is formed. And it's the eurythmy sounds, which are the speech sounds.
That's cool.
It really is cool. So there's this truth to these sound beings, which, so you have the spiritual aspect, of course, of speech. But even without that, you have this accessibility to imagination, breath, movement, the inner and outer movement, and the taste of language. All of those four pillars are part of speech, or how you find your way into speech. And when you lift, like if you look at the exercise, it's a breath exercise that Steiner gave, in the vast unmeasured, I'm not doing it in speech, but I'm just saying it, in the vast unmeasured worldwide spaces. And then these spaces go out, 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 out. All of a sudden you're taking your life forces, that this ego within you, and you're taking the life forces, you're giving it color, you're spreading it through the room, boom, you touch the heart and soul of the listener. And so you're strengthening yourself, you're strengthening your life forces, your I, your ego, you're containing and working with the feeling life, the astral, and all of these are working together to enliven sounds and speech and words and literature and texts and whoosh, which is why I felt like I was on a magic carpet ride, because everything had a life. And so the magic of speech is what it does for others. It's amazing. You know, I was a class teacher for, you know, over 25 years and a speech teacher most of that time. And to watch the children stand up straight, or their eyes are sparkling, or their cheeks are rosy, or they just, all of a sudden they have a breath when they didn't have it before. So this is talking more about speech, not about what it is, but what it does.
Yeah.
So that I've gone off your question.
No, actually,
I realized.
No, I feel like you gave me a picture of, like, when you said that, the beginning of that verse in the vast unmeasured, you know, like how it spreads out, like something happens in one's mind as well as the body. And then, you know, how it's connected to the sound, you know, going back to your story and the challenges you faced with, I'm assuming it was challenging with,
yes.
Yeah, with the dyslexia and,
yeah,
and,
they just,
you know,
told me I was stupid and couldn't learn.
Oh my
it was
gosh.
No fun.
That's just, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I hope that does not happen as much anymore. My goodness. I think they're pretty on to dyslexia at least, though maybe not to all kinds of differences, but, how did this heal that in a way, or did it heal that
it
in a way? Yeah. And you're, because you do healing work and therapeutic work now with speech.
I do. I am not a therapeutic speech artist, but I have worked with the healing modality of speech, you know, for decades, and partly because of my own story. And so, for example, with children who have trouble hearing sounds, because dyslexia is not really about the sight, it's about the hearing. It's also about the words getting jumbled, but it gets jumbled from the auditory. And so to be able to distinguish between, you know, a D and a T by moving into the gesture, see, you can't see me, but moving into the gesture of a D, where it just is there. And then a T is so similar. You can't always hear that. But if you think of if you think of the D word, like down or dragon, right? So that moves down. You have this movement, this inner movement to the outer movement to boom, the sound happens. And then you have something like a T, which is much more, it kind of pinpoints down. Right? It just sharpens at the end. And so those distinctions are small in a sense, but in a speech sense, as you're forming those sounds, it's quite large.
Hmm.
Even though they're both earth sounds. And then you have the vowels, the singing sounds, or the soul sounds, whatever you want to call them. And they have this inner gesture and movement as well. And children who have difficulty with reading, often it's those vowels that trip them up. They can't hear the difference. I can't. And the spelling, you can tell by their spelling. Like I still can't. I'm better speller than I was because I've been working with these for a long time. But the sounds of the vowels are really difficult. And so to hear a difference between an O and a ooh is not easy for many children, or an ah, an a, whatever it is. And so to form it, to shape it, to have that inner experience, outer experience, and whoosh, move it out, then it becomes kind of this objective truth that you can hear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love this. I mean, I feel like how many kids could be helped if they had this sense of it in all schools, where you show them the differentiation, not just by looking at it, but by recreating it in your own mouth and then also with your body? Because are you also doing, are you doing any movement with it?
Or, I am. Or, and as I'm talking, I'm doing the movement.
You're doing the movement, right? Because I can hear between the duh and the t. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I can also see how that would get very mixed up. I'm thinking my kiddo, there's, you know, my dad's from Syria. So I think when he would talk to me, sometimes I have like these little, like instead of cliff, I say clift. Like, and mm-hmm. I didn't know I was doing that until I heard my child saying it like that. And just these little variations that happen. And then how do you correct them? Because that's how you've heard it for so long, or that's how you've heard it in your head for so long, yeah. Even if someone wasn't saying it that way. So the whole, I think we all know that like whole body learning is the way to go. I think we know that, but that's speech is right. Taking it a step further, I think. And yeah, maybe say a little more there. Like, yeah.
Well, you need to embody, it's like a singer, you know, a good singer, the person is the vessel. Right? You agree with me on that one?
So yeah.
The same thing with speech. You are the vessel. So it's this objective speech. Now, I have a really hard time staying in objective speech when I'm talking about speech because I'm a good, you know, fiery choleric and I am very passionate. And when people hear me passionate, they're like, they think I'm forcing something on them, which is, you know, exactly what Steiner says happens.
I can relate. So, you know, no worries there.
Okay. So if I get a little too much, you know, you'll know.
No.
Now I lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
You were talking about being the vessel, you know, in the house. Yeah. In speech. Yes.
So if you're objective, so you have this movement of the sound, this inner movement, this outer movement, but you must have the imagination with it. It can't just be in your head. You'll have your whole body engaged in it through the imagination, through the movement, of course, through the breath. And also through the taste, what I would call the taste of the sounds, the experience of the sounds, you know, you can feel them in your mouth. It's not just, you know, looking in a mirror and knowing where they are, but just really feel them and then give them away. Because what is speech? It's to give away. It's communication. You don't keep it for yourself.
Oh, that's beautiful. Maybe some people should keep it for themselves. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
But they're not doing proper speech.
No, they're not doing proper speech. I'm just making a joke. But you know, I was thinking about actors, and I was in a couple performances in college. I think the Merry Wives of Windsor, and then like one other one. The second performance, I must not have done so great in the first because I have one line in the next play. And I remember I had a therapist at the time, just like she wasn't a regular therapist. I don't know if I've ever had just a really ordinary therapist, but she said, you know, bring that one line you had with your whole self. Like have the posture and the imagine what you're saying to them. And I had to say, the dinner is on the table. And I remember thinking like, maybe you could say that because I just said it, but I think it'll sound different if you said it than if I said it.
Well, we can break it down.
Yeah.
Because first you have to see the table. There's the table. I'm pointing to my table. Mm-hmm. Then you must see the plate. Then what color is the plate?
Right.
What texture? Then what's on the plate? What is that dinner?
Yes. I mean,
this is how you build up a story. Whether it's drama, poetry, storytelling, doesn't matter. You want to build up this imagination. And the more you can be curious about what you're speaking and let the text tell you. I am not inferring anything. I am saying, oh, the dinner is on the table. That's what you said. I know I need a table. And now what is this table going to look like? And what is the plate going to look like? And is there silverware or drinks there too? Right. So you get curious and you build it up and then you can point to it. There it is outside of yourself. And somebody else is going to be eating or you're asking a question What was the thing? The dinner is, no, it's a statement.
It's a statement, it's a, yep.
It's effective speech. There's these seven gestures, dramatic gestures that Steiner gave, six, seven. And he says everything can come out of these dramatic gestures. And they're very potent healing tools and also tools for classroom management.
Oh my
Best
gosh.
Things for classroom management ever. But I digress. So
No. I want to know about these. What are these six or seven things that the gestures? So
one is effective. You're just pointing it out. There it is. There's the table, right? There's the door. You're going to say, shut the door. You're going to look at the door. You're going to see somebody going and you're going to point to it and say, shut the door. Just very simple, very objective. Mm-hmm. Then there's the cautiously, and that's a very important tool for the teacher. You could say the next one is cautiously moving forward, which is like, so class, if you take out your crayon, well, I'm not sure I want you to take out your crayon rolls. Well, okay, take out your crayon rolls. Now, I think you should... No, I don't want you to do that, right? That's cautiously moving forward. That's an exaggeration, but how many teachers do that, right? That, me included. Like, I change my mind midstream because I go, oh, wait, they don't really need to take out, right? So, but if you just say, take out your crayons, unroll them, pull out the red crayon, raise your hand with it so I can see it. That's effective speech.
Yeah, it's also really reassuring. It's like, oh, this person is, I know exactly what I'm being asked to do, and this person's asking me directly. It's good. Feels
it goes
nice.
Back, that's right. It goes back to my first experience of safety. And that I knew that every time I walked that garden with those statues, I would feel safe and that those statues would be there. So it is very safe and very reassuring. You put antipathy with it, which is one of the gestures. Then it's like, take out your crayons, right? It's a sharp jabbing kind of thing. It's not pleasant at all. You need antipathy in everything, but that much antipathy, not so much. And the same thing with sympathy. Again, many teachers use sympathy way too much. Oh, children, please. Take out your crayons. Show me the right. They run the other way. Anybody who has too much sympathy, they run away. Anybody who has too much antipathy, they want to fight. And Steiner talks about this in his The Art of Lecturing. That this is true for adults and for children, right? That's a few of them, but we won't go through all of them because this is not giving a speech lesson.
Thank you though. I really appreciate, I'm just thinking about how I talk to my children. And also this funny thing in this creative writing program I'm in, I put a paper in and it sounds like this, the wishy-washy one a little bit, that the professor was like, oh, you're what they call a hesitant writer. And I was like, what is that? And he said, well, your sentences were like something like, well, she approached the bed, or instead of like, she sat on the bed, or she started to walk towards the door instead of she walked towards the door.
Exactly.
Perfect. Yeah. And so he was like, go back and take out all the hesitancy. And I was like, what does this mean for my life? You know?
Well, that's the thing. Speech is, you know, really about our journey.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, what else do you want to tell us about speech? I mean, it's just so amazing.
Oh my gosh. I could tell you so much.
Tell us everything. No.
In an hour. Sure.
Yeah.
Tell, you know, the question I had is, A, it's interesting you've never had a speech artist on your podcast. And B, why did you think that your listeners would be interested in it?
Well, I had heard that you did a program with the Anthroposophical Society with my good friend Laura Embry, who does form drawing. And I just got really curious about, you know, what would it be like to have a speech artist on the podcast, and would they be open to it? And I figured if you did a program on Zoom, you'd be open to it. So, you know, I because of the profound experience I had, and because I know, you know, like you said, the accessibility is so important to you, and it can take a really long time, or, you know, you have to move to the Gurteanum to do the training for, or whatever, you know, like all these different things about learning speech. How could we bring it to people where they would get a taste of what it is and get curious and then maybe want to, you know, try out more or learn more about it for themselves as parents or as just as human beings or teachers. And so, you know, that's what I was really interested in, you know, exploring with you. And I think, you know, your personality just makes it so open too. It's not, oh my gosh, I do remember being in that speech class and thinking, oh my God, I have to do this exercise again. It was so hard. Like I didn't do we all had to keep doing it. The teacher would be like, no, that's not quite enough of the rolling thunder or whatever it was.
Right.
Not enough. More. And so I think there's that aspect to it. It is work too. So
it is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of practice. Although again, it's, you know, the way I was trained and many people were trained, I think is the old way. Mm. Not, you know, it used to be I said dog and you said dog and you did it the way I did, or you did my exercise and I, you know, just the same way. Yes, you have to have a model for sure. But almost always after I say, like, you know, do in the vast, unmeasured, worldwide spaces, and maybe we go through the whole thing or part of it. And then I say, what are you experiencing?
That's great.
The other person.
That's great. Right? Yeah, that's very different.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is why we're going into in the vast. Use that preposition in, and then use the V, the. Then you can get into it. Then I give something practical, like in the vast, unmeasured, worldwide spaces. That exercise I used every morning when I was teaching, when I was a class teacher, to imbue my classroom. And I would just move out each line into different corners of the room. And you can't see my arms again, but they're going out like a, you know, in a horizontal and diagonal way, so that the whole room kind of was touched by these sounds and by this, because I also find this a very profound exercise. It's not just an exercise, this one.
Right. It's also a verse. It's like the only one, isn't it? That he's like, you can use this as a verse or also as a speech exercise. Yeah.
Yes.
Steiner says that.
Mm-hmm. And so it really is. And then you can do it forward, you can do it backwards. There's so many different ways. And when we explore speech together, sorry, again, you can't see my hands. We just massage it. We work it. We get curious. We form. We step back and experience and take a moment for the silences. We move. We walk. We laugh a lot too, right? So we have experiences, so that when you go home, you can do in the vast, unmeasured, worldwide spaces. And again, you know, any speech artist listening to this, they're going to kill me now, but just do it.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's right or wrong. There's no right and wrong in art.
Yeah.
And speech is an art. Oh, and we want to free our voice. Right. So that's the goal that we're looking for. But we can't listen to ourselves, because the minute we listen to ourselves, we go into our head. The minute you go into your head, you're not embodying the speech. So that doesn't work. And so you just experience it. You just move into it. You really let the help of the spiritual world guide you. And you just speak the verse or the sounds or the exercise or the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute you do that, you take a breath. And what is breath? Right. It's spiritual.
Right. Yes. Taking in the spirit, and it's our connection with the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Thanks for that explanation. I think that, yeah, I'm just thinking of like people that maybe haven't heard of this before, and they have like certain poems or songs they sing, even words to songs or things like that, or just a word that, you know, I hear like teenagers will be like, oh my God, I really like this word, you know, mm-hmm. have like these certain attachments to things. And it's something that can really be, you know, if you have a verse you say to yourself, or a poem, or even song lyrics you sing to yourself, these things, they become 3D, you know, they're not flat. There's meaning there. And this is taking it to this expanded level of experience. Yeah.
A conscious level.
Conscious level. Right.
Right. More in the consciousness soul. Yeah. Epoch. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So you want to take something that's unconscious.
Yes.
To consciousness.
Yes. Wow. And I guess this also makes me think of, you know yourself. Like, would you say that doing speech or working with these things helps you get closer to who you are and your identity, as well as the spiritual picture of, you know, in the spiritual world, you know?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about this all the time, you know, so, like you just did about the hesitancy. There's something that we do in speech and they go, but I do this in life. For me, it was letting go. So with speech, you let go in the vast, unmeasured, worldwide spaces. And it goes and it goes and it goes and it goes and it goes. And you have to let it go. You can't bring it back to yourself.
Hmm.
You have to let it go, like projective geometry, until you come back and grab it, the next line. If you don't let it go, it stays with you. And again, then you're not giving it to anyone.
Yeah.
Ooh. So this letting go, many people have trouble just letting go. They say something and then they go, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said that. And they pull it back.
Right. Or they keep explaining because they feel like they maybe haven't done enough. Like they have to say more to try to get it across, rather than just let it be too, right? So
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So everything we do resonates with people where they are. And so one of the reasons people have such a hard time speaking in public and even doing speech classes, etc., is because it's so exposing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the gifts, you know, it's like unwrapping gifts with speech. One of the gifts of speech as a teacher or as a person is that I can hear, you know, I've built my listening capacities. So I can hear so much more than what you're saying.
Hmm.
And many of us that can, but it's even deeper.
Hmm.
So if a child is struggling with something or says good morning in a certain way, most of us can tell, oh, there might be something going on. But you really have to listen. But what speech gives you is the ability to see even more of the being of the person.
It's beautiful. Can you give an example of that? Or something? Maybe it was even with your own children or with yourself or with a colleague or...
Well, one of my first class, I had a girl in the class, and she was kind of shy and a bit awkward. And she, you know, these large headed blonde girls, and she struggled with different things. But when she knew a poem, she kind of knew it.
Mm.
But the rest of the world didn't quite see her in the way I did.
Mm.
And then, so I'm just going to kind of switch you to eighth grade. We did Fiddler on the Roof for our play. That mm-hmm. was awesome.
Yes.
And
great musical. Great musical.
It was great. And my son was a dancer on Broadway, and he came in and did. Taught the dance and it was just fantastic. Anyway, I'd just brag on those eighth graders. They were amazing. But she did this part that I gave her and I don't want to say too much because
yeah, you don't
I don't
want to
know who's going to be
identify her
listening.
too much.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
but she did this one part, and she just her voice exploded in just such an amazing way all through the auditorium. We did it in the round, and it was just we did it on the floor, and the audience was on the stage, and it was just whoosh everywhere, and it was so powerful. And afterwards, one of the parents, who was also a pediatrician, oh God, I shouldn't say that gives away too. Anyway, she comes up to me and she said, "Who knew that this person had this voice?"
Yeah.
And I said, "I did."
Yeah, right.
Because I saw that strength in her soul.
Mm.
It just needed nurturing
mm-hmm.
throughout the years to come out in public.
That's amazing. That's a beautiful story of, you know, really seeing someone and seeing past maybe just everyday behavior to something that is like core to them, and that they, you know, that she had that strength with the verses, or she would get those poems right down. And then you saw that, and then you could amplify that with her, you know, so
mm-hmm.
nice. It's so nice to have people in our lives like that, that recognize something inside of us that maybe we don't, or that we don't trust yet, or that we haven't developed. And so I think that's so nice, and how cool that speech can be one of those things, you know, that
yes.
cultivates that. So yes, I think that's really lovely story, actually.
And heals this, the insecurity.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and brings the I in, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. just really so.
That's what speech does, it incarnates you. That's why there's so many things that you cannot do before the age of 9.
Huh. Okay, can you say more about that? And just maybe say what incarnating means in case anybody doesn't know.
Okay. I don't know. You tell them what.
Okay, so like it's like get into your body and be here
yes.
on Earth instead of like, for me, I know I walked on my tiptoes like forever, right? I started walking on my tiptoes essentially. So I was like, no, I think I'd rather stay up there. That's fine. I'm just going to float around and wear my dance outfits all day. But, you know, it's like get yourself on Earth. I mean, I think I'm still working on it, frankly. But yeah, just get yourself here and be really present with where you are and on this planet and who you are here. And then the trick is, you know, to also keep that spiritual connection in a way that doesn't pull you out of yourself. So anyway.
That's right. And children today are actually coming not so much on their toes, but on their heels.
Ooh, what? What? Huh. What's that mean?
If you listen to children's, many of them are speaking, "I can't do it," but have that raspy, almost vocal fry kind of voice.
Whew.
When they're very young.
Yeah.
Listen to young children. Yeah.
I think my son had that.
This is a crisis in language development now.
I believe it.
Children aren't listening. They're not hearing conversation because everybody's behind a screen.
Right.
And other reasons. The parents have to work now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's just so much. And then, of course, with the pandemic, it even amplified that.
Yeah.
And so many children are speaking, have delayed speech.
Yeah, for sure.
And when they do, and then there's a lot of intellect and also a lot from the electronics.
Yep.
And so their voice goes back into that. And that should not happen, especially in young children. In young children, you always want to speak forward. You want to have it on your lips more.
So they see it and can experience it. So it's right out front. Is that what
and it's just where they are developmentally.
Where they are, right. I know
the lips are the feeling lyric kind of place. And the back there is the will, which should not be engaged in that way yet.
I was thinking of my son who didn't speak till he was, my first child spoke so early, that, you know, but then, you know, my son, he didn't speak until he was about 2. And the first thing he said was, "Uh-oh." Something fell off the table, and he had this like low raspy voice, which he's still like pretty much always has. But like he just watched something fall off and turned and looked at it. And I was like, oh, he said something. I don't even think that's really a word necessarily, but those were the first
sounds. It's good.
Besides like mama, dad, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. But that's interesting. That kind of growly. Yeah. I'll have to watch for that. I know loads and loads of kids. It's so interesting because my niece actually has had a hard time speaking. There's been, I mean, whoever, for whatever reason, but the OT came in and said that her parents need to, have you heard of the toothpaste method? It's Adam mm-hmm. Blanding, a medical doctor, talks about it, where mm-hmm. you squeeze their limbs like mm-hmm. all the way down. And that's like, that's an example of incarnation, I think, mm-hmm. is like getting her into her body, and her speech is so much better now than yeah. it was because of that pressure. Like, here you are on Earth. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been extreme on both ends. It's really true. So the speech incarnates because I think of it like a puppeteer. So the ego is like a puppeteer. It's controlling the physical body and the astral. Can I say astral and etheric?
Yeah. People
the astral and the etheric, or the life forces.
Yeah.
And it controls all of that. And so when with a young child, and really until 21, right? It's not really there yet. So you have to be careful. You don't want them to be too much on Earth, like fast, furious.
Too early, right.
And shockingly. Mm. So if you do kind of, a lot of people do these, brave and true, I will be,
yeah.
each kind word, right? And they pound the beat. And some of that's very good, because shouldn't do that with a verse, but let's say we're doing it for a reason,
mm-hmm.
and we're going, and we're stepping it. Brave and it still should be a rhythm, not a beat, but brave and true, I will be, right? So you have that. But if you go a fourth grader, it's more, it would be brave and true, or forge me with fire. It's this downward, almost like a beat,
mm-hmm.
because that's what happens in fourth grade. But in first grade, you don't want that. They're not there yet. It
right.
will put them there too fast. So you just, it's really just a matter of understanding. It's one of the pedagogical speech, which is a phrase that I've been kind of coined years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what I teach. It's pedagogical speech, storytelling, and healing, along with poetry and drama and all the rest of it. I mean, I teach it all. But this pedagogical speech is something that's so near and dear to my life, because it is, I'm first and foremost a teacher.
Yeah.
And so, and always wanted to be a teacher, an artist, a mother, and married to the same person forever. And now I'm all four of those things. So that's
Yay.
Really nice. Yay. But anyway, as a teacher, these pedagogical speech, working in pedagogical speech, is so nourishing for the child and for the teacher. And so therefore you don't kind of burn yourself out. You really have these tools you can hold on to. And when you have a child that you don't understand, you've got the capacities for listening to what's going on, rather than kind of, and then this intuition works, and all, it's not like other things don't do it either, but speech, you can really listen and let your intuition guide you. And the where to place something so that the children can feel it and experience it and enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so lovely. I'm definitely gonna make sure that I use the the hashtag Waldorf teachers, all of those pedagogical speech, all those things, when I post this podcast, because I hope people will get to this and learn from it, and then come to your workshops and contact you, because it just seems like there are so many ways that people attempt to help children or work on the issues of our day. And this one is so, I mean, it's focused on the body and the human being, and what a beautiful and gentle and creative way to help heal. It's just really mm-hmm. great. Yeah. So, you know, we're kind of getting to the end of our time. What else do you want to share about speech before we go? And I'll make sure everybody gets a link to your website that's just up.
Wonderful. That would be great. It doesn't take a 4-year going to Dornoch or England to get a speech training anymore because we have a speech training right here. I have a speech training with Christine and through Kairos. And so people who really want to dig deeper can do that. And people who want to do pedagogical speech can take pedagogical speech intensives and or join Kairos. You don't have to have you can get a certificate in pedagogical speech and eventually a diploma in artistic speech. It takes a while. And also from IARTE, you'll be able to eventually get a therapeutic speech diploma if that's what you want through Kairos.
Cool. And that's through the Center for Anthroposophy. People can
through
find
the Center
that
for Anthroposophy.
Okay. I'll link that too for people.
Okay. That would be great. And so, but it's also you'll on the website, you'll see that will be these intensives can be separate from Kairos too. So we have these parallel trainings going on. So what do I want people to know about speech? I think that that's what you asked me, isn't that what you asked me? So what I really want people to know is to not be afraid of speech, of raising their own speech, because you know that the children imitate. And you know that Steiner said, many people know Steiner said, you know, you need to be worthy of imitation. And that's true not just of the young child. So if our speech is slurred, if our speech is not imbued, if our speech is not empathetic, if we do not have this free speech, then trust and goodness and beauty and truth can't live for the student or the child, or right? Mm-hmm. So there's that part of it, but also that there's fear and excitement, you know, are double-edged, right?
Yeah.
And I always know that if I'm a little fearful of something, it means I need to go towards it.
Oh yeah.
And that this is something that will help individuals on their own journey, will imbue the people around them with beauty. And Steiner talks about how we take what we hear into our sleep. And that lives in us, which is probably why people say don't go on the screen or watch TV, because all those, not only the images, but the sounds are in your sleep life. And of course, we know that that's where the spiritual renurturing happens.
Right.
We get nourished in our sleeps spiritually. And if we are being nurtured by poor speech, especially the students we teach, again, if we go to pedagogy, then we're doing a disservice to them. And then they can't take back really what you're hoping for them. So if you're a teacher and you're giving them this beautiful lesson about apples and you just say it through your head and you say it kind of growly or whatever, however you do it, they'll take that. And that's how they'll keep it.
Wow. Right. Without the light of enthusiasm in it or the light of clarity in it, that you can imbue the speech with those things, right? And those images.
That's
and
right.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
So I would just say do speech whenever you can.
Yeah.
Have fun, learn about it, enjoy it, play with it, be curious.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that positive attitude. Now, I have a question. How would you feel about saying the verse that we were just talking about in the vast, unmeasured, worldwide spaces?
Saying it in speech?
Yeah, for everybody. Sure. And we can conclude on that. Okay, awesome. Oh, I love this.
All right, I'm going to just stand up so that I can actually move. So I'm going to make some noise. Okay. I'm going to say a breath exercise for you that it's really good before you start anything, before you walk into a room.
Hmm.
It's an F, the letter S, like mm-hmm. in snake, and the SH.
Great.
And it's just, you know, think of those golden stars, and you just bring that down and go. So that's something everyone can practice.
I want to try it. Can I try it?
Okay. Yes. I was going to say, will you try it?
Yeah. Okay.
Put your arms all the way. Okay. Yeah. And put your arms all the way up. It will help you, your etheric, move these sounds. And then don't speak it until you get to your speaking part, your larynx. And then really embody it and put the SH into the ground, like roots of the tree.
Okay. I'm going to try. Rookie, everybody. Rookie here. Okay.
All right.
So I did
No, you did a beautiful job. You really had those sounds going into each other. You really want to move them like that form drawing, you know, that's why form drawing and speech go so beautifully together.
Hmm.
You move them into each other. And then you had the SH. I kept thinking you might want to push it out a little bit, more breath out, but you got it into the ground.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, you're welcome.
More coaching needed, but I'll take that. Thanks. Okay.
Okay. Which is what you had said to me, isn't it? That this hesitancy thing.
Oh, yeah. Totally. You're right. Uh-huh.
So that would make sense.
Oh,
That it didn't penetrate completely down into the ground.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
And see, you're in Scotland, and I even know that.
Okay. That's incredible. I have a 2023 goal now, don't I?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you're saying actually that I could work on the hesitancy through speech work with you.
That's what
yes.
I'm saying.
Okay. Good. Now everyone can know whatever they got going on for 2023, they can work on it with you through speech work.
Thank you. I'd be more than happy.
Okay, good. Okay. Watch out. Your inbox is going to be full. Okay. Thank you for.
Oh, that will be fine.
Thank you for everything. And we're looking for the verse right now. It's going to be, thank you so much for saying it for all of us. And then we'll say goodbye. We'll take a moment and then we'll say goodbye after it. Thanks.
Okay. All right. In the vast, unmeasured, worldwide spaces, in the endless stream of time, in the depths of human soul life, in the world's great revelation, seek the unfolding of life's great mystery.
Thank you so much, Debbie. That was beautiful. And thank you for the whole conversation. It's been super fun, like just fun and really informative and inspiring. Thank you so much for saying yes to being on the show and trying this all out with me. And it's super. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. And thank you for really helping speech get out into the world.
Awesome.
That was just so exciting. So thank you.
Thank you.